Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Welcome, everybody. Dr. Homebrew. Back at it, judging homebrewed beers, judging your homebrewed beers, which is more important than other people's homebrewed beers. You know what I'm trying to say? With me, as always, are the two Brians, Brian Cooper and Brian Schar. What's going on, boys?
Well, we are remotely socially distancing from one another. And drinking some beer, and we're going to be about that with people who are distant from us in time and space and who cannot drink the beer we're tasting either.
Damn, I love that. I love that recap, that overly complicated recap, man. It's great.
That's what I do, man. Can I overly complicate some other stuff?
That's right. I'm a lawyer, for God's sakes. I overly complicate shit.
Do you want to maybe eat a hamburger? I can talk for 10 minutes about how you should do that.
I would love to eat a hamburger. That sounds really great right now.
Well, first, you might want to find a cow.
Well, that's probably very true. Yeah. Before we get to all that, though, of course, Five Star Chemicals. You go to fivestarchemicals.com. Learn all about the best cleaners and sanitizers in the world. Why? Because they come from Five Star Chemicals. They are the absolute best. You cannot live without Five Star Chemicals. I'm telling you right now, you will die. No, I'm kidding.
I actually died once, and then I had to be administered some five-star chemicals, and then I came right back to life.
Man, I love that story.
This story did not actually happen.
That's a testimonial that I can stand behind. I appreciate it.
Do not administer five-star chemicals to dead people.
or
live people.
Yeah.
Yes, don't do that.
No, you would never do that. But anyway, it is the absolute best way to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment. Your beers will thank you. Your finished product will be better. We promise. Use five-star chemicals. If your local homebrew shop doesn't stock them, please ask them to do so. That'd be really great. All right. On the show, we're going to have Mark back, and he has two beers. One is a blonde ale, and the other is an IPA. An IPA? Is that how you say it? That's how you pronounce it, right?
So N-E-I-P-A?
Yeah. New England IPA.
So for that one, I'll probably just be drinking my Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest, but I'll still try it. I'll still give it a shot. You know what I mean? Well, here. Mark is actually here right now. Let's admit him into the room. Virtually, of course. I'm going to sort of get this party started. I am excited about this this blonde ale. It sounds fascinating to me. So I'm interested to hear about that. Mark, what's going on, man?
Yo, homies.
How's it going, buddy?
Ooh, we've been upgraded to homies. Nice.
Hell yeah, dude. What a difference a show makes.
What did you sip while we were talking to that other dude?
Well, I had to keep going on the Italian Pilsner, make sure it was up to standards, of course.
Of course.
It sounds like you did a good job at it, too.
Well, coming in at 7%, man. You know, might be a little out of style, but it is tasting good.
Nice. I just had to make sure it's up to standards.
Gotta empty that keg so you can brew some more.
That's right, man. That's right. All right, Mark. So I think the first beer we're going to drink from you is a blonde ale with a bunch of stuff in it.
Yes.
What's all this stuff? Brewed with mezcal, honey, peaches, and orange. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Let me lay the groundwork for this beer.
Please do.
My homebrew club, we do a quarterly club-only competition. There's a theme typically around that, and with it being kind of harvest season right now, the theme was go down to the farmer's market and grab whatever you want. And it just has to incorporate something from the farmer's market. I partnered with a guy who's owns a meadery here in Loveland. And we put this beer together. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on.
Okay, I
so
love
is it.
It
is it mezcal honey or is it mesquite honey?
I have no idea. Talk to the honey man.
Because I got to believe that it's – because mezcal is like it's like an agave thing, and it has to do with partly with how you process it and toss it in the fire and all that. Hmm. And I'm not sure what the bees are going to eat from a flower standpoint to make it mezcal honey. But it would – I tend to – I don't know. Maybe we'll talk to the honey man sometime. Give us his phone number, and we'll have him on the show.
Let me give that out to you real quick.
Personal cell phone only, please.
Yes. See, the bees only pollinate agave plants, and then they bring back the honey, and then they ferment it. They're special bees that have distilleries in their hives.
Nice.
That's what I read.
That's tight.
Those would be some damn good bees to have around.
I love that. So what made you decide to throw in all the other stuff?
Well, I mean, just try. Well, first of all, I just wanted to make something that was super drinkable. Wandale, nice, just kind of a base for about anything. And I'm, in addition to fermenting beer, I love hot sauce, and I ferment a ton of hot sauce. And I'm a pepperhead, and so I like pepper beers. You know, you love them or hate them, but just wanted to do something where I was incorporating some fruit and incorporating some peppers and working with my buddy who has the meadery, and we had to throw some money in too.
You know, pepper beers really are like that, man. You either love them or hate them. You're not in the middle of the road. Like, cause you said that, I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's not go too far out there in left field. But then I started thinking about all the pepper beers I've had, and I've never been on the fence about one. It's either this is pretty good or this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
That is weird. Because, like, pumpkin beers, you can sort of be on the fence about.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can be that way with pepper beers.
Well, you can be on the fence about it as a style, but I don't know. You can,
you know what I mean, though, right?
If you don't like pepper beers, you should still be able to find one that you like. Because there's such a thing as balance. And you gotta, if you really love spice and all you want is spice in your face, then. Great. The crazy unbalanced pepper beer that melts your mouth is going to be fine for you.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you what, before we get into this beer, let's take a quick break. We're going to tease this. I'm going to switch the brakes up a little bit. We're going to come right back here with Mark and his blonde ale brewed with mezcal, honey, peaches, orange, habaneros. And I realized there were no punctuations in there, so you have no idea which words actually go together, but you'll find out right after this. Hang on, this is Dr. Homebrew.
Now serving patient number 189. Number 189 to the counter, please.
Now back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We are on the phone with Mark. And we have his blonde ale with mezcal honey, peaches, and orange habaneros in our glass. And Mr. Brian Shar is going to start us off here.
Ooh. I'm very honored to be able to start.
Thanks, man.
So, Mark, thanks for being with us. And thanks for telling us on the last show, for those people who may not be listening to these back-to-back, about your homebrew club, the Wise Guys. So, how many members do you have?
You know, we fluctuate, but probably between, you know, pre-COVID, between like 30 and 50, pretty active members.
Nice.
How many guys are actually Wise, though?
All of us, man. We're a club that we really spend a lot of focus on education. We drink a lot of beer, of course, but, you know, we focus on education. We put on just a really killer homebrew competition every year. In fact, if you pick up the August issue of Zymergy, there's a big write-up on our homebrew competition.
Nice.
Cool.
Wow.
I need to read about that. I'm in Worts of Wisdom, and we're a medium-sized club, too. We probably fluctuate more like 20 to 30, you know, active members any given time, but we're also very education-focused. And, you know, it's a good manageable size of people to have in a club.
There are some Wise people in that club. I've met them.
Yes. And there are some Wise Mad Zymergists.
There's some wise asses, too.
So we could praise each other some more, which I'm totally into. Or I could review this beer. But
yeah, let's review this beer.
Praise you some more. Brian, your beard is looking quite well-groomed and handsome.
Brian Schar.
Thank you.
Let's review this beer.
I recently oiled it.
Let's focus.
We're reviewing beer and not Cooper.
Okay. No. Beers, not beards.
So spice herb vegetable beer, you know, I actually really like this style. This is a 30A. I got what I thought was stuck on a panel at competition that JP ran like a billion years ago in at EJ Fair, that B3 forum comp.
Yeah, I love that.
When EJ Fair wasn't even completed and we were judging and there was construction happening around us. And we're in this like half finished brew pub in Concord. And I got on a SHV panel and I had like 8 beers, like 2 of them were 40 plus. And I realized, you know, people, some of these, you know, it has a bad rap among homebrewers, but there's a lot of real creativity and a lot of really fun stuff that can happen in the spice herb vegetable category. And frankly, I often volunteer to do it just to experience some of that creativity. But this beer aroma, I thought was real good. Low malt aroma, like a 2-row malt, medium orange aroma, very low peach that I might have talked myself into smelling. No hop aroma, which is fine for the style. No off aromas. I didn't really get any honey aroma or any mesquite or mezcal aroma. And I will point out the base beer for this is a blonde ale. So it's when you're judging spice, herb, vegetable, you're kind of looking for the characteristics of the base beer and also looking for the unique aspects that the declared ingredients bring to it. And a blonde ale really doesn't need to have any hop aroma. It's got low malt. I mean, this is consistent with what you'd expect the base beer to have. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Oh, I'm not sure if I said the score. I gave it an 8 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. It's crystal clear. It's light gold. The lack of crystal clarity is a little condensation on the glass here. Head is low and persistent, and that's fine for this style. Flavor, incidentally, you know, it's interesting. I'm getting a little bottle variation on this because the previous bottle that I had a sample from earlier this afternoon was a lot hotter than this. Had a lot more habanero spice, I thought. And all my comments are directed toward that one. Oh, this one's not quite as intense with the habanero. Initially, I got some warming right out of the gate. Then some very low floral hop flavor, low 2-row flavor. And the habanero just kept coming up. And the balance was really more between the habanero spice and the malt than between the hops and the malt. The habanero just kind of blew out the bitterness for me in the previous bottle. This one, not quite so much. There was a little bit of low orange at the beginning. Finish is long and spicy hot, well attenuated. Okay, there's some more of that heat now that I've had another sip. The honey and the peach, to me, just kind of get lost in here. And part of that is that honey is one of those. It's like a simple syrup or Belgian candy sugar or something. It's going to ferment or dextrose or any of that stuff. It's going to ferment out almost entirely. And then what you're going to be left with is the flavor that was in that honey. And unless that flavor is really strong, it's just not going to get left behind. That's why if you put in just straight honey into a beer, it tends to just get lost. And if people are looking to make like a honey flavored beer, they'll typically use like that honey malt because the honey malt has a honey flavor to it, but it doesn't just get lost in fermentation. But overall flavor was good. There's no off flavors. Gave it 11 out of 20. Mouthfeel 5 out of 5. Body's medium low. Carbonation's medium. Definitely more perky than creamy. No alcohol warming. Although, frankly, it's a little hard to tell because of the, even if there were, I think the habanero would kind of cover that up. No astringency. Overall impression, I gave it a 7 for a total of 34, which is very good. The really excellent creativity. This might be something like a Rauch beer, where sometimes if you're drinking like a Schlenkerlaw, you need to have like one or two before you really your palate adjusts to it and you really taste all the complexity. And this may just be a beer that requires you to have two or three pints to really get all the flavor in here. But the added ingredients are kind of unbalanced, and the habanero to me kind of blows some of them out. And I get some of the orange character with the habanero, but the peach and the honey goes away. And I would suggest that if you rebrew this, you might go for like habanero and orange, or habanero and something else, or ditch the habanero and focus on the peaches, honey, orange. Or if you want that heat, maybe cut back on the habanero a lot, like 50%, 75%. So it's kind of a background heat. But to me, that there's a clash between the amount of habanero and the peaches and the honey, because they're getting lost in this combination. But overall, I still like the beer. I think it's a good concept. What I do taste is good, and I think it's a good 34.
Nice. All right, Brian Cooper.
All right, I like. Well, the hello, my name is label on this beer, first of all, and all the ingredients are listed there in weird order.
Hello there.
Mezcal, honey, peaches, orange, habaneros. Okay. So 30A, spice or vegetable, I will say, is not my favorite style to judge, unlike Brian. Sometimes they're really well done. Often I find that there's something overpowering and awful in the beer that makes it too out of balance for me. And I don't care for them. And you get some weird ones. Like sometimes you get ones that you've never had before. It's just like, I don't know this herb or vegetable.
I'd like a coffee cucumber saison. Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I was like, I brewed a beer with fenugreek or whatever. Yeah, like, okay. It tastes mapley. Great. should have just declared maple. No. Anyway, it's in the nose, the beer is lightly sweet. There's not much honey detectable in there. Just a touch. But low herbal hop and medium low peach. It's a clean ale fermentation character. Medium low fruity esters. No DMS or diacetyl. There's a hint of a peppery spice in there for sure, and a light oranginess below everything else. But appearance-wise, it's a pretty yellow gold with a substantial white head that persists pretty well. Mostly finer bubbles. Attractive beer with good clarity, definitely. Flavor-wise, it's a – one of the things I like the most about this beer is just the soft opening. You take a sip of it, and you're presented with nice fruit and honey alongside the malt. And then it opens up into this peppery, not explosion, but like there's a kick that it doesn't immediately present itself, because the sweetness kind of cuts it. And then that dries off your tongue and you're left with the oils from the pepper coating your tongue and expressing. So the beer has like two different flavors to it. It's one is the soft opening with the fruit, and then it goes to spice, and then the aftertaste lingers. You want another sip, and then you get that experience all over again. So it's kind of fun that way. I like that. There's a bready based malt there. Nothing too challenging, as you shouldn't need anything crazy in a blonde ale. It's a balance of the malt, I would say. The peach and orange are fairly well in balance, and they come through to me, especially in that initial impression of the beer. It just kind of blooms fruit. Okay. Fruit. And then a little spice, a little more spice. But it's a flavorful spice. I would say that the habaneros are not just all heat and a one trick pony. It's a really nice pepper quality with a medium low level of heat. I would say, you know, it's spicy, but it's not harsh or sharp or biting or rip your tongue off spicy. I've had some chili beers that have been just like, you know, level 4 Thai spice. I couldn't even finish the pint. Like, I can finish a pint of this for sure. The bitterness is pretty restrained. It's not biting. And that would fight with the pepper, I think. That pepperiness does linger in the aftertaste, but it's not harsh or too biting to me. Mouthfeel wise, there is a medium burn in the back of the throat, but not from the alcohol. You know, it's just the pepper gives you a little warmth, a little tingle, a little not pain necessarily, but a little sharp kind of okay. There's pepper, mm-hmm. And I'm a spice head too. But like I don't like pepper beers usually if they're not well balanced. So I don't really go out seek them out and order them. But I'll go to overall later. But
same,
yeah. Medium carbon dioxide, somewhat smooth despite what all is going on here. There's no obvious astringency. It's actually pretty well. You can tell that there's a nicely brewed blonde ale behind all this. I love the opening flavors of this beer overall. Spice or vegetable, again, not my favorite. Blonde ale, not my most exciting style. I rarely would order one at a brew pub in the 90s, let alone now. When I was like, oh, well, blonde ale, I'll take that as a part of the sampler, but give me the IPAs, please. You know, but I like the way the pepperiness kind of creeps in. It could be dialed back a touch for sure. And then I think that would improve the balance, as Brian, you know, stated. I agree with that to an extent, but I do also like it the way it is. And I think you could also choose to bring up the peach and other things a bit. And I don't think they would fight with the pepper. It would just give it a little more counterpoint. And that initial flavor would linger a little longer before the pepperiness kind of kicks in. So, but it's clean. It's a well-brewed beer, a nice job for sure with good ingredients. And, some fun, fresh ingredients apparently from your farmer's market, supporting the local farmers. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it represents the style well with so many ingredients declared. You know, sometimes what you want to do if you're entering a competition is just decide which ones to declare, even if you know, oh, well, there's mezcal and, or, well, there's no mezcal. It's probably the, whatever that cactus honey or whatever it is in there. And,
cactus
honey. Peaches come through, the orange a little bit. But, you know, you might want to go to like, hey, let's make a peach habanero beer.
Well, I think it's Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's orange habaneros, right?
Yeah, you got that correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
okay, I think that that orange that you're getting is maybe some of that peach that's like darker peach flavors.
It's a citrus flavor. So I thought there was orange in here. I was struggling to find it, and I wouldn't declare it if you had declared orange. So, okay.
Yeah.
My misconception there.
Mine too.
But yeah, just back it off to a couple few ingredients and define them carefully, because judges can get confused, like we just did. When you're gonna, this has orange and habanero, and well, there's no comma between the orange and habanero on the entry form, so I'm gonna actually, well, I should have thought, yeah, that's probably orange habanero anyway, as opposed to other colors of habanero. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
yeah,
my bad. All right. Well, I gave the beer a 37, and I thought it was a very, high range of very good toward excellent beer. And I like the balance, and I like the way it kind of blooms, and it's just kind of it's interesting. It's definitely not something I drink a ton of, but in mm-hmm. a competition, I'd be impressed with this. Like, this is a really nice homebrew, and they paid some attention to it. So just a touch more heat than I'd like for the balance, but the other ingredients would shine through better if it wasn't quite as hot. And you'd like the spice. Mm-hmm. I like the spice. I like the flavor of this spice. And I think you did a good job with that. So it's not offending me. It's just throwing the balance off a tiny touch. And it's a fine balancing act too. You don't want to lose it either. I don't think I'd back it off as much as Brian said, 50%. Yeah, 20%. Start there. You know, if you like the spice, keep it.
Yeah.
Do 20.
Yeah, I went a little crazy.
Uh-oh. Brian craze. Did you give him a score, Cooper?
37.
Okay. Yeah. You know what, Mark, I would echo sort of a mixture, which is the best part about going last is because I can just pretend that I know what I'm talking about, is I get a mixture of both of what these guys said. When you taste the honey, what does that taste like individually? Mark, could you let us know just a little bit?
You know, I, here's,
I don't want to jump ahead, but to the recipe, but
okay. I mean, you can. We can do that.
When we threw this in, there was definitely two different stages of honey. The first stage was just super late in the boil.
Yeah.
And we added that honey. It's been too long since I've tasted it, but second stage, we actually just my buddy that I brewed this with, we got these dried habaneros. And he took his honey, added the habaneros to the honey, basically the day we brewed the beer, put them in sort of like a, I don't know, sealed container or whatever, and let them hang out in that honey for 2 weeks while this thing was fermenting out, and then added that back basically post-fermentation. So, oh my God, this spicy honey, if I could recreate that,
but
it was absolutely.
So you think, wow. So that was my question. Aside from the other question, was it, do you think that really imparted any flavor? Cause there's no liquid movement or anything. I can't imagine it's extracting much flavor, but you're saying that it did.
Yeah. In terms of like the post fermentation,
yeah.
Habanero honey.
Yeah.
It was the habanero honey.
Okay. Well, the mezcal honey, but is it smoky? Is it, you know, basically what I'm looking for is any flavor that came through into the beer, because what the guys are saying essentially, and whenever you enter these categories like spiced, herbal, fruit, whatever, is if you can't find that flavor in the beer, then you shouldn't claim it as mezcal honey.
I agree with that statement.
Right? Okay.
Totally, because as a judge, if somebody's going to call something out,
yeah,
I've got to be able to pick it up.
Right. Yeah.
However, I've had a lot of good luck calling out some flavors and calling out some unique ingredients and,
yeah.
I mean, to benefit, like,
yeah,
it's people are able to find it. And I think Brian Schar, you know, you call that just like with honey, like it does, it ferments all the way out.
Yeah.
There's nothing left of it.
No, man.
It's just like adding cane sugar. Like there's nothing left. So unless you're going to like kill off the yeast and add that during bottling or something like that as your carbonation source, you're really not going to find a lot of that in the beer. I had three options on this beer. I could have entered that as alternative fermentable with the honey. The honey's not detectable, so that wasn't an option. The fruit beer with peach, the peach is so low, that didn't seem like an option. And the habanero is the shining characteristic in this beer, so spice or veg felt like the best category to put the beer in.
I mean,
agreed.
Even with the peaches, and this is sort of the other point I wanted to make, is I can't tell if it's distracting or adding, you know, the sweetness is there, so maybe that's balancing out the habanero, but it's also not really peach. It's more of just like a generic, like darker sweetness. And so I think you would have two choices for this: either take away the peaches and see how it goes, because I love the spice flavor. I think the spice flavor is great. Either you take out the peaches and see how that tastes and, you know, sort of like fine tune it, because I think this is a cool beer that you could, you know, rebrew. Or maybe if the peach flavor isn't there, maybe you add a little flavoring, like peach flavoring at bottling or something like that. Just sort of like brighten up the peach flavor, because, you know, when you get a peach that's overripe, it ceases to taste more like what we think an artificial peach would be, right? And it's just more of like the sweet sugar of it. And that's what I'm getting out of this more.
I think I get kind of like an underlying, like, it's like, imagine like a habanero apricot jam or something. Like there's a apricot jam kind of quality underneath. Like it doesn't scream peach, but if you could taste it, like as a subtle.
That's that darker, slightly the darker flavor.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. But then it's not, but that's what I'm also saying. It's not really peach. If I see peach on there, I'm going to think bright peach. But even when you say apricot, that's more subdued. Anyway, I think the habanero flavor is good. It's not overpowering. It does stick with you, but it sticks with you enough that you want more of that prickly flavor. It's not too much, and it's not not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you did really good. Would you mind giving us the recipe on that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Base malt is a pretty simple beer. I mean, obviously it's a blonde ale. We have a local maltster here in Loveland, Root Shoot Malting, and they've got a really sexy base malt, Genie Pale Malt. So that's what it's grounded in. It's an 11-gallon batch. It was 17 pounds of Genie Pale Malt. So, I mean, if you guys had to substitute that out, probably just like a raw pale malt would be fine. And then just 1 pound of Carapils. And then it was bittered. It was just whatever I had at home. I had Nugget. So it was 1 ounce of Nugget at 60. And that was the only hop that went into it. And then we added 3 pounds of honey, basically at flame out. And then this is
fermented. How much of a mess was that?
Oh, not at all. Yeah, my buddy Adam, he's dialed in. So yeah, we cool. had the honey completely heated up. He had it in these bags, and just basically we were just able to add that at flame out and stir it up, and
cool,
yeah, no mess at all.
Oh, that's excellent, because that can be, I mean, flame out's probably good because the kettle's hot and that steam and stuff will heat up the honey, but yeah, that's where stuff can go horribly wrong when you're putting that thick syrup into your kettle.
Agree. Yeah, the thing you want to avoid with that too is if you're going to add honey at any part of the hot side, don't do that in, you know, while you're boiling, because that's going to end up on the bottom of your
kettle,
and it's going to scorch and you're going to have a nasty beer. So,
oh yeah.
Even flame out, you know, a good rule of thumb is typically just like pull some wort out of your kettle, add your, you know, honey or lactose or whatever sugar you're going to use and blend it at that time, and then add that back to your kettle to avoid that scorching. But we added the 3 pounds. We used a local yeast. It's Inland Island. It's just Northern California ale yeast. Super clean, real high fermenter. The OG on this beer was 1046. Finished out at 1008. It was right around 4.9% ABV. And then, yeah, like I said, he grabbed some of these dried habaneros and took some more of that honey and put them in this sealed pack and basically did like a sous vide to kill anything that was on the habaneros and anything living in the honey. And then just let that hang out and just marry inside of that pack for a couple weeks. And so when the beer was fermented out, we added that back. And I guess I got to back up one step is, kind of mid fermentation. We used, it was not fresh peach. It was, the Vintner's Harvest,
puree.
Yeah. So the habaneros was our item that came from the farmer's market, peach puree. So I think, you know, like I said, it's so low on the peach, and no offense to Vintner's Harvest, that they make a great product. I've used them in the past. The particular cans that I had from them, I've had them for quite a while, so that might have been part of it, and probably like the honey just, you know, completely fermented out, all those great peach aromatics probably blew out.
Yep, it's the honey, I think it's the habanero that squashed the peach a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah,
that's a great habanero flavor.
I'm a chili head. I don't think this is hot. I think this is just super drinkable. Yeah. I have no problem having a couple pints of this. I'm really enjoying it, having it on tap at the house.
It's great. I mean, you know, it's how do you guys say it in Colorado? Once you come off the lift from the pow pow, brah, right? I don't know, man. Whatever. we broke Brian.
That was pretty hilarious, man.
Anything else, Mark, that you have for the boys, or
is
vice
it,
versa?
The nar-nar?
It's the nar-nar, bruh. The
nar-nar is definitely a thing.
Yeah. I like... Yeah, go ahead. I like the way you described this beer, and I could tell that you had fun brewing it. So that's part of the, you know...
That's the main thing. We got to remember that.
Like Denny and Drew say, if you're not having fun while you're brewing, what's the point of doing it anymore? Like, you make it too crazy and complicated. You just got creative and got a little culinary with it and did creative stuff.
It reminds me of that IPA that I did with the only time I've ever done this. It was Szechuan peppercorns, ginger, and like sort of like orange heavy, you know, hops. I forget the recipe, but it turned out really cool. I wouldn't ever brew it again. It is that, like you were saying, Cooper, it's the culinary sort of, you're taking flavors from outside of beer and putting them into beer and seeing if they work. And right. Yeah, and that's, I mean, that is at its core, that's what homebrewing is.
It's heady. It's a wise person's thing to do.
That's right. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And then, Mark, if you want to hang on, we're going to pop your New England IPA. And we'll take that for a spin. Are you okay with that?
I call the spice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get that ready here.
All right. Hang on, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Ma'am, I'll need to take your top off for this examination.
Oh, doctor.
All right, everybody, thanks a lot for sticking with us. We're going to wrap it up here, but first, we're going to chat with Mark again about his New England IPA. Now, Mark, I don't know why you decided to torture me with this New England IPA, but is this the first time you've ever made this mistake and made a beer like this?
No, I'm okay. Really digging making these beers right now.
Okay.
I am a little bit scared to have you guys pour these, as I'm only one for two in terms of my bottle variation, and I know this beer has a little bit of age on it, so we're...
Well, okay. One or two of us ought to like it.
That's right.
I'm guessing it won't be JP.
No, well, maybe. You never know. Stranger things have happened. So before we get to this, though, that Blondale, what was the ABV on that?
4.5%.
Okay, good.
He said like 10.48 starting gravity.
It feels like it was like 8%. Like I feel just totally buzzed out of my gourd right now. I don't know why. Maybe because I'm hungry. But it's
maybe
like
you've been drinking less, or
yeah.
Have you eaten since yesterday?
No, I don't think I've eaten ever. Yeah.
And Mark, did you say if that was like a two-row blonde ale, and I just totally missed it?
Specialty craft.
That's right.
Shark, can you turn yourself down a little bit? Suddenly you're just like way so loud, much louder. Yeah.
Okay, blowing us away.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. It happened.
Okay. A little bit
that's
further better. Away
yep.
from the...
That's okay, perfect.
If I just am right here. I was too close to the mic.
Cool. That's all right.
You
don't worry about it, man.
Something. You're good.
Yeah.
All right, Mark. Okay. So this is not your first NE IPA, you said, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Perfect.
But it's... Definitely my favorite one that I've brewed so far.
Okay, and did you send this just? You didn't send this to just get straight judged. We're just it's kind of a a bonus beer that we're just going to take a little bit of liberty with, and we're not going to fill out score sheets or do the thing. And I say we, of course, you guys, everybody knows that I'm not referring to myself. We're not doing score sheets, but we're still talk about it a little bit because it is interesting beer. People still, you know, brew these for whatever reason. And I'm kidding. And people want to know a little bit about it. So, Cooper, if you want to just sort of kick off the discussion and kind of talk about this beer a little bit.
Yeah. So for those of you that want to do, you know, to judge along, there's a New England IPA BJCP style. It's a provisional style on the web. It's but yeah, you can find that, and it's 21B Specialty IPA New England IPA. So that'll tell you kind of what you're looking for in this beer. And overall, it's just kind of a intensely fruity, aromatic beer with a soft body and a really smooth, silky mouthfeel. It's often opaque. It's not murky necessarily, but it's going to have some level of haziness, and that's not from yeast necessarily, but they it's a tricky recipe where you use a lot of grain, longer chain grain proteins combining with hop polyphenols to make a permanent haze in the beer. I really like the aroma on this beer. It has a nice papaya and passion fruit, guava, mm-hmm. hop aroma. This is just what you want. This is just what you want.
It smells like a little bit like Lick-A-Maid. Remember those things where you had like, it was like just pure candy sugar dipping stick that you lick.
That's the definition and then of juicy,
the
right
different,
there, yeah.
The different like little pouches licking, of like lime or whatever. Yeah. It was like, that was the thing. And so this to me tastes like, or smells like sort of like the lime Lick-A-Maid, flavoring where it's like that, not artificial, but bright. Yeah. It's bright.
The hop aroma here is just phenomenal.
It really is very, very, smells very good.
This is what people brew and drink any IPA for, in part, I think, is the huge quantity of really fresh hop aroma.
Yeah.
That's real nice.
And there's a little malt in there. It's kind of neutral malt in the background. There's no like super substantial specialty malts that are going to stand out in this beer, and that's fine. It's a little malty. You know, there's some fruity esters aside from the hop fruit component, but mainly what you want is just tons of hop. And you know, the breweries that do it right, they go, I mean, in the end, it's usually all Whirlpool and beyond. And you're going with 4 pounds per barrel hop levels, you really push the edge. And as a home brewer, you can push to that edge without, you know, spending hundreds and thousands of dollars on your hop for the batch. You know, and there's a reason some of these can be more expensive beers when you buy them. And if they're well brewed, it can be worth it. So there's a lot of dry hops, usually multiple dry hops with the tropical fruit hops being featured. I hate the word juicy, but it sucks, dude. I hate it so much.
I'm with you on the juicy thing because it's not juicy, but it's maybe not fruity.
What I think once you get into the flavor and the mouthfeel combination is where the juiciness comes in, because it's a little bit of it's from all the permanent haze that's in there with the silkiness of the body combining with the some of the flavors you get. It has a juice like impression because it feels substantial in your mouth. It's creamy. It's got body to it, but it goes down smooth and light like an IPA at the same time. So you drink it and it tastes kind of like a juice in some ways. Yeah, I haven't drank this yet, but I'm just like spending a lot of time on the nose because I really like the nose here.
I agree with you. And what I like, you can see on the webcam, maybe not that readily, but you can see through this beer. It's not so hazy that it's opaque, and there's not like a bunch of sludge at the bottom.
I mean,
right.
I
yeah,
will,
it shouldn't be.
I will say this.
Leftover.
Yeah, like Warren and I, you know, when this style first kind of came out, we would hammer this style, and with good reason. But yeah. I do think it has evolved a little bit as people figured out how to brew it. And what they don't want anymore, what they're not doing anymore, at least not in as great quantities as would get on my radar. But putting that sludge in there, putting the floaters in there, there are those things that happen. But it has sort of refined. It's definitely a cool example of a style that's evolving as it continues to grow in popularity, which is kind of cool. And that doesn't really happen a lot. Brut IPA did, but that went away. Black IPA sort of kind of did, but that was sort of one dimensional. But New England IPA is still evolving, I think.
Right. And I think there's two problems with it. It started in New England, of course, and you know, it's yeast dependent, and you get some stone fruit esters from the yeasts that are used out there. You want to use the London Nail 3 a lot of times. You know, different people use different yeasts, but there's a number of them you can work with. Barbarian, you know, but it's not about having that yeast stay in suspension. That yeast produces some of the nice stone fruits you get, but it, just that yeast itself, that's just it's a fair amount of that, and you get some of that. And you can also work with using sugars to make the yeast bring out different flavors and dextrins and things, but I think the part of the problem is that, like, you know, HomebrewCon happened out on the East Coast in Philly. I had to miss that one. I was bummed. But people came back and started trying to brew New England IPAs without really understanding them. So here on the West Coast, I think we got a false impression of what the style is all about. And then the last time we were able to go to HomebrewCon out in Rhode Island, we got to taste a lot of these beers at the source. And it was fun. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah.
It was really cool, and they're not always that hazy. Like you order an IPA there, and it could be slightly hazy, and it's just that's how they serve them there, and they use a lot of oats and wheat adjuncts to bring out the unmalted wheat, flaked oats, and to get it to combine with the hop that's in there, and
Mark
they. But the other problem is you want to serve them fresh because these beers don't age well.
No, they don't.
No.
Mark, are we okay to talk about your work for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Or no? Okay. So you're working at Left Hand, which everybody knows Left Hand, the amazing milk stout. Are you guys – and so when you sent over the T-shirt that Brian is wearing, you sent over a bunch of different experimental beers. Are you guys making any IPAs over there? And if so, how are they being received? Let me just preface that by saying, I guess it's not a preface, right? Because I'm stupid. But I'm interested to know how larger, regional breweries, I guess you're a regional brewery, are sort of approaching new styles and pushing the envelope while definitely into homebrew territory while still, having to maintain sales and market share and all that kind of business junk,
I'd say, and Brian Cooper's got a couple of our couple beers in front of the camera there. And I'd say one thing that we've learned as a company that we've definitely embraced is leaning into our strengths. And our strength as a company, our strength as pretty much the craft founder of nitrogenated beers is that nitro beer. And we're leaning into that really hard. So if it's, Cooper had our Imperial Stout that's on nitro, obviously Milk Stout Nitro, that's what we're known for.
Yeah. Sorry, Cooper, I drank that. That was the first beer
I like the Galactic Cowboy. That's a good name for a beer.
That is a good name for a beer.
Galactic Cowboy is a really cool beer too. It's a lower ABV Imperial Stout, but the unique thing with that beer is it's incorporating Galaxy in Imperial Stout.
Wow.
Cool.
So it's kind of crossing over between like a black IPA and an Imperial Stout. It's kind of innovative.
So it's a pretty hoppy stout, pretty intense.
I think it is, yeah. And, yeah. You know, it's definitely unique. So we've also started exploring kind of into, like, the cocktail space of nitrogenated beers, too. So that's been sort of a fun thing for us as a company.
Yeah, I had the tiki one. I drank that the other night.
Tiki with it, yep.
Yeah, it was, you know, and it was good. For me, it was too high ABV. It was like 7.5 for a wheat beer. And I was like, I just, and maybe it's me. And that sort of goes along with my question, especially about any IPA, but just sort of, you know, larger regional breweries doing experimental beers. How is that for the company? How is that being received in the marketplace? Because for me, traditionally, you know, this is what you were just talking about, what Cooper was just putting on the camera, what we were just talking about with the tiki drink thing, that's what you would think of with like a nano brewery or like super small craft brewery. You don't think of larger breweries spending the time to innovate and sort of push forward with these funky new beers. So are people digging that?
Well, I think innovation is a really key element to the future of craft beer, especially thinking about like New England IPA as an example. It's like, who isn't trying to make one of those at this state of affairs? So if you're not thinking innovation, you're not thinking down the road. If you're not sick of fucking seltzer beer, oh my God.
Hard seltzer.
Taking over all the doors at our liquor store. So yeah, I mean, just like, you know, really thinking about innovation, like you got to be paying attention and you got to be looking down the road. We're unique because we've got this niche, and thankfully during COVID, we've got this niche and we've got a lot of chain relationships, and that's fortunate for us.
Yeah.
So you expressed an interesting thought to me earlier, and that you're the most decorated homebrew award winning person to actually still be working at this brewery. I don't want you to necessarily brag about your medals, but and you can, and that's fine, but I'm more interested in like the transition of becoming a, you know, from a home brewer to someone who works and is passionate about a brewery.
Yeah. I'm the director of accounting. I am a nerd both on numbers and I'm a nerd on the homebrew side. And that's what opened the door for me to Left Hand. And I, you know, back in the early, late 2000s, you know, I just started getting obsessed with beer, and I had a neighbor that was homebrewing, and I sat in his garage and I learned what he was doing. And I was a foodie, and I was learning to, you know, like combine my love of, you know, crafting something in the kitchen to crafting something in my garage that I could share with people. And this opportunity opened up at Left Hand, and I was able to put my degree to work while being able to, you know, my love of beer. And honestly, it's provided me a lot of success just because, you know, I've got a good understanding of, you know, recipe formulation and understanding ingredients, and being able to step back and understand its relationship on the finance side, which is not very exciting, but for me, it's pretty cool. But yeah, it's been a hell of a journey. And, you know, I've started with Left Hand when, dude, we couldn't make beer fast enough to now almost 10,000 breweries in the country. And
it's crazy.
You know, we're fighting for every shelf spot that we can get, to now we're dealing with, there's, you know, no restaurants or bars really operating to the level that they were back in, you know, January and February. It's been crazy, man.
I mean, no doubt. As nutty as it is for consumers, it's got to be double nuts for the producers.
Yeah, and you know, consumers, and as one of them, I'm raising my hand right now. Like, consumers always want something new.
Like, yeah,
and, is it new?
I don't. I don't know what that is because I don't. I am not that consumer. But this is a thing that is a flaw in my system, in my coding, whatever, that I've admitted for years. Where it's like, I do marketing, but I hate marketing. I drink craft beer, but I just stick with the things that I know. And I don't really branch out because I've been burnt so many times because there are too many breweries not doing the things that I like very well.
Have you found yourself in a position where you walk into a liquor store and there's just this wall of beer?
Yeah.
And there's so many choices and you're overwhelmed. And rather than make a choice based off of cute or sexy artwork, you're making a choice based on, I know that Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is going to be solid every single time, and there's a date on the package, and I feel confident with it.
Bro, I'm the guy that you will see walking down the aisle of Safeway, pulling beer out and looking at the back box because I know, in general, beer distributors rotate stock. So I will find the freshest beer because I love Sierra Nevada so much. I want it fresh as possible. Because I understand how travel can affect the end product. I mean, doing the sensory panel that Byron threw together for us at Sierra Nevada, 70 degrees for a week changes your beer structure. It just does. And that's why people at Sierra Nevada are so passionate about it. And so that's why I want to find the freshest beer possible. But anyway, it's a weird time, and it sounds like that's something that we could really just kind of get too far into it. But I do want to, Mark, if you want to, do you have the recipe for the NEIPA if you want to share it with people?
I'll preface this with a couple things.
Okay.
I feel like I've been 0 for a couple with you guys on just, you know, my shitty bottling practices.
Yeah, you suck, dude. I'm sorry.
I was scared to send you guys this one just because, you know, it's such a delicate beer, and those hops, you know, those, you know, that can go in a really bad direction really quick. You know, while this beer is not very old in general, for a New England IPA, it's probably a little old. It's about 2 months old. So I couldn't tell.
I mean, this comes across super fresh, like it was something that was bottled a week ago or something.
Yeah.
Oh man, you should have tasted it when it was a week old. Because trying to brew IPA for me as a home brewer, I don't think I've been that successful. I made this beer, and I'll talk about my process here in a second, but I really feel like I just haven't been successful, and I've blamed it on a variety of reasons. This beer finally came out, and you know, people are paying like $20 a 4-pack for beer.
Yeah,
I'm like, holy shit, I made this. I was pretty stoked.
So I wish you guys more than taste it
when it was like two, 3 weeks old.
And that I think is sort of the driving factor of the popularity. Because, and like Cooper was saying earlier, and what you just said now, Mark, is it needs to be hyper fresh. It cannot sit for even a week, changes it. So if you're one of those NEIPA heads who gets there the day that it's put into the bright tank or whatever, right? You're going to taste the freshest possible, and you sort of want that that same flavor. You're constantly chasing that flavor, so you're going to be waiting in line. You're going to be doing this thing, and it is sort of unique style in that way, where even a week age, even if it's refrigerated, will change the beer.
Yeah,
but this traveled really well.
It traveled very well.
The bitterness is soft, and it's.
I went back to the blonde ale. That's all I'm saying.
The mouthfeel is just right. I still have some of the blonde ale, but I'm going to finish this one because this is I would say this is the best of the three beers that we've judged for me tonight. One on the last show, two on this one.
Yeah.
I would give this a 43.
Hell yeah!
Wow. All right, Mark, go ahead and give us the recipe. We have about 5 minutes left, so
yeah, let me run through it. So this is an 11-gallon batch.
Okay.
The base malt for this, it's sort of local. It's proximity, but basically just trying to use like a Pilsner malt as the base. So 22 pounds of Pilsner malt in an 11-gallon batch. It had 6 pounds of white wheat. It had 4 pounds of flaked wheat. And 1.5 pounds of carapils. It was bittered with Magnum, a half an ounce at 60. And then, sorry, homebrewers, I get hops for free, so I'm sorry about that.
Never apologize for getting free hops, man. We're just a little envious.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, I'm going to walk through this next part. It's going to be a little bit of a bummer because I know what hops cost. and then Whirlpool for 20 minutes, 8.5 pounds of Galaxy and 7.5 pounds of Citra.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, how many pounds of Citra?
Not pounds, 7.5 ounces.
Oh, okay. I swear you said pounds for a second.
I think you might have,
okay.
Yeah.
It's the Italian Pilsner speaking.
Yeah, that's still quite a bit. What's your batch size? 5 or 10 gallons?
This was an 11-gallon batch.
11 gallons, said, okay.
Yeah. Yep. And then this fermented out with a local yeast, Inland Island fog yeast. And then in terms of just a water profile, I don't have that in front of me. I definitely do a water adjustment on every beer that I do. This is absolutely chloride heavy.
You're like 2-to-1 chloride to sulfate, or where?
Yeah, that's how, I mean, that sounds about right. But yeah, definitely trying to create that soft, pillowy mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And then some advice that I got from the guy that owns that Inland Island yeast company in terms of like that biotransformation that's going to happen, you know, as you're adding hops in mid-fermentation, I said, you know, when is the best time to add that first dose of hops? And he said, soon as you see fermentation kick up.
Hmm. Interesting.
So basically day one. So as soon as I got some level of Croizen on that beer, I hit it with a dry hop. And so for me, I split this batch in two. And the one that you guys are tasting, I'll just talk about that. So day one hopped with 4 ounces of Citra and 1 ounce of Citra Cryo. And then probably day 5, 6, it got another 6 ounces of Citra.
Wow.
God
damn.
Wow.
That's what a recipe sounds like when you don't care about how much it costs. Because that cryo is not cheap. It was hyper expensive.
Right. Cryo, I did purchase. Okay. Citra, we have some hops.
Sure,
so
yeah.
That is one.
Right.
What do they care, man? Like, yeah, 6 ounces, sure. Yeah,
you probably sweep those off the floor and you get all the hops you want.
Yeah.
Oh, well, but yeah, in an 11-gallon batch, you have pounds of hops. It's not just ounces. Yeah.
Right.
If you total this up, how many ounces of hops did you have total? And divide that by 16 for us, please, because I can't do math.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot.
What I do like about the style, I do shit on it a lot, and I don't apologize for it. But what I do like about it is the aroma. And a lot of this, probably 60 to 70% of the beers that I smell that are this style smell chalky, smell aspirin-y, smell funky. But this doesn't. This smells like, I'm not going to say a bag of hops because it's sort of tired, but it smells like fresh hop extract or fresh hops in liquid of some kind, right? It smells fresh. And it, when the style is done well, I'm going to be honest. I don't like the flavor of this style. It's not my thing, but I can admire the aroma, and that's sort of what as homebrewers I think helps sort of like lock in and solidify the homebrewing aspect for us is the smell of hops. Like we wouldn't be doing this if we didn't like that, right? And so, especially your beer, Mark, it smells great. I mean, it's if I could rank shit by smell, it would be right up there, man. It'd be great.
Yeah.
If I didn't like have to taste
good
it.
A good carnitas burrito would be like number one.
It'd be great, man.
This might be like two or three.
Well, like if I could just judge beer on smell alone, this would be top tier. This would be S tier beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Oh, here's the thing.
The aroma is so fresh and amazing.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
In the 90s, people would brag about how many IBUs they got into their beers. And
I got,
you know, it's
50.
Like, this is a bitter IPA. Like it's 100 IBUs. Yeah. And, but if you had 100 IBUs with this, it would be totally out of balance.
Oh
it wouldn't
God.
Work.
Yeah.
But because it has to have a soft mouthfeel, it has to have a soft impression, and it's the aroma is what's driving everything. You're tasting the aroma as you're drinking it, and you get that with the smooth mouthfeel and the some flavor of hops in there as well, but it's not bitter. It's not
– no.
Yeah, I mean there's some IBUs here because you get them in Whirlpool and you added a little bit, you know, in bittering just to balance, but it, you know, it's not – it doesn't stand out. It's just enough to balance.
Yeah.
And you got it just right, I think.
Appreciate that. One thing I definitely want to throw out there for homebrewers, this one unique process element of this beer that I hadn't ever done before. And like I said, I feel like, you know, in 10 years of brewing, like I've never really made an IPA that I've been stoked about. This beer I've always done, I've always purged my kegs. I've always purged my kegs with CO2 and I'm always racking into my kegs, but I'm always racking into my kegs with a racking cane, with the auto siphon. The thing I did different on this beer, and I know this is probably maybe just like a safety issue too, but so be careful with this, but I
pressurized your fermenter.
I did. Yeah. I pushed the beer out with CO2. This is a beer, like it's so delicate and those hops are so delicate. Like I didn't want to screw it up.
You don't want to put it through your auto siphon and have any oxygen get in there.
No, not at all. So yeah. And honestly, I just rebrewed, the same base beer with this. There's a new hop that just came out called Talus. Pushing that. I just bought a pound of that. Just brewed it last weekend. Really stoked about that. Went to morebeer.com just as of today and purchased the diaphragm pump so I could do exactly that and avoid the CO2.
There you go.
Scariness of, with my glass.
Gotta be careful there. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're pressurized your carboy a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah,
you know those like orange.
Don't do this at home, listeners. This is a recipe for going to the ER.
Yeah, for
sure.
Well,
I mean, really, like, so here's how this works: is like you get those orange carboy caps, and you put your racking cane down in one end of that, and you're going to hook your CO2 up to the other end of that.
Right. They're going to release the pressure before the carboy blows, for sure.
Exactly. The orange carboy cap is going to pop off if the pressure got too high. It did pop off a couple times. It felt a little scary, I will admit.
I feel like you have to have a lot of PSI internally to blow the thing. Now, if you zip tied it down, maybe you might have a thing. But yeah, I think you're all right. Well, Mark, look, man, it sounds like we can talk to you all night, and I really appreciate you not only sending us the left hand beers and the shirts, but also your homebrew. I really appreciate it, man. And if you have anything else to send us, whether it be left-hand beers, I'm not going to say. Whether it's your homebrew, you know, I'm fine with that too. Please do.
Right on. Appreciate the time, guys.
All right. Thanks, brother.
Cheers.
Thank you, Mark.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for sharing this really awesome beer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you want to hear more cool information like this, we have, I don't know, we're at like 170,000 shows for this stupid Dr. Homebrew show. So check that out. There's a lot of Brew Strong happening right now. Jameel and John Palmer. A lot of Jameel right now has a lot of guests because John Palmer has some things going on, but everything's fine. I think the boys reconnected recently. So actually, they just recorded tonight. So there's a ton of Brew Strong material. There's like 8 new shows out there, something like that. And with more to come. They're going to be catching up soon. So check them out. Brew Strong is there. The session, of course, is happening. For you guys listening live, I'm going to be recording with Party Beer Company in LA on Friday.
Party, like P-A-R-T-Y?
P-A-R-T-Y, with my good friend Lee Bukowski, who used to be with Eagle Rock. Now he's with Party Beer. I have some of his beer. I'm going to drink it. It's going to be great. I think we're doing another live session on Monday as well with I don't know who, but I'm very excited to find out. So anyway, there's a lot of homebrew and craft beer information going on here on the Brewing Network. And of course, if you're interested in what Justin is up to, he's releasing a bunch of videos over on our YouTube channel about his trip to the GABF. Yes, the GABF is still happening.
Wow.
And Justin is not only going to be broadcasting the award ceremony, but he's going to be doing a little bit of behind-the-scenes issues about how that's happening. So it's going to be fascinating stuff. So check it out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And until next time, everybody, we'll see you later.
But